Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. Today we are rerunning our Friday show because KNSJ has been off the air due to a weather-related transmitter issue. Our show includes interviews on the Trump travel ban that were taped before Friday's federal court decision halting that ban nationwide. The ban was upheld over the weekend, at least temporarily, by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, allowing refugees and immigrants to resume being admitted to the U.S. for now. The case remains in court, however, as the Ninth Circuit hears arguments from both sides. Today, we open with some top local news stories, including autopsy results in the Alfred Olango shooting, a recall election launched in the San Miguel Fire District, a disparaging remark made by an El Cajon Veterans Commission official regarding an Iraqi-American councilman, an upcoming vote in the Grossmont Cuyamaca Community College District on whether to protect immigrant students from deportation, and hearings on redistricting in El Cajon. Our newsmaker interviews today will be with David Murphy, director of the International Rescue Committee, and Kathy Anderson, director of Survivors of Torture here in San Diego. They'll be talking about how President Trump's executive order restricting refugees and green card holders from entering the U.S. is impacting people here in San Diego and around the world. Then, political analyst Gene Carpenter will join us on the second half of our show to discuss the ramifications of Trump's orders to build a border wall, punish sanctuary cities, and ban travel from Muslim nations, as well as pushback from California and some members of Congress against Trump's orders and concerns being raised over the role of white supremacist Steve Bannon in Trump administration actions. If you've bought milk, we'll have news about a class action lawsuit that you may be eligible to join. And then on Vines and Wines, learn about a new apprenticeship program for jobs in vineyards being offered at Cuyamaca College. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine, and I'm here with Gene Carpenter, as well as Rebecca Williamson and Kim Cooney, to give you our local government report. Now, one of the biggest news stories of the year last year was the shooting of Alfred Olango, the African-American man shot by an El Cajon policeman. And Gene, I understand that you have an update on that case.
Hi, Miriam. It's nice to be here with you today.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
The county medical examiner has released autopsy results on Alfred Olango, who was fatally shot by an El Cajon police officer last September. The autopsy reveals that Olango was shot four times with bullets and simultaneously tased with a taser. The medical examiner also found cocaine in Olango's bloodstream. Olango's family had called for help because he was acting erratically. A psychiatric emergency response team, or PERT, was not available. But within moments of arriving on scene in a restaurant parking lot in El Cajon, one officer advanced toward Olango, gun drawn, while his partner aimed a taser at Olango. Police said Olango ignored directions. Instead, he pulled a vaping device from his pocket and pointed it at the officer with the gun, who then fired the fatal shots at close range. Police have said the officer believed Olango had a gun, since he assumed a shooter's stance, as a video appeared to confirm. But Olango's death at the hands of police while suffering an apparent mental health crisis, coming on the heels of other high-profile police shootings of black suspects by white officers across the nation, sparked days of unrest, marches, and protests. 1 week before the autopsy findings, District Attorney Bonnie Dumanis found the shooting justifiable and said no charges would be filed against the officer, despite circumstances she called tragic for all concerned. Olango's family and civil rights groups have denounced that decision, calling for justice for Olango, and have indicated plans to file a lawsuit against the city of El Cajon. Miriam, I understand you have a hot issue from the San Miguel Fire District.
I do, Gene, and thank you for that update on the Olango case. You could say that an already combustible situation at the San Miguel Fire Protection District was made even more divisive last week when three members of the board were served notices that a recall campaign is being mounted to oust them. Now, at the outset of the meeting, district resident Bob Setterdahl handed recall notices to board president Teresa McKenna, as well as to directors Jim Eck and Mike Facchio. Those directors, along with Kim Raddatz, had voted the same night to negotiate a contract that would switch dispatching services from Cal Fire to Heartland Communications. That vote was 4-3, with directors William Keel, Jeff Nelson, and Dave Rickards opposed. Now, the background on this is back in 2012, San Miguel voted to contract for fire protection from Cal Fire after district revenues plummeted in the wake of a recession that severely damaged property values and forced closure of a fire station. But after the economy improved and the property tax revenues started going up, last July the board voted to terminate Cal Fire as the district's fire protection contractor and return as a standalone district, hiring its own firefighters and other support personnel. In an interview with East County Magazine after that meeting last week, Setterdahl said the targeted board members are ramrodding the district into returning to a standalone agency, however, without doing an impartial study first to see if the move is financially sound. Patrick Walker, that's the deputy district director for the Cal Fire's union, Local 2881, said the recall petition was initiated by 10 citizens who reside in the district, but the Cal Firefighters Union is supporting the recall effort. Now, that recall could cost taxpayers a lot of money, $600,000, to hold a special election, and that's quite a bit considering the district until recently was struggling financially. To qualify for the ballot, the initiative would have to collect a minimum of 9,906 signatures for each of those three petitions, or 15% of all the registered voters in the district for each candidate up for recall. Now, the three directors who were targeted for the recall say that the arguments are intentionally false and misleading. They accuse Cal Fire of being behind the recall effort as a, what they call, last-ditch effort to keep control of the fire district and that lucrative contract. The directors who are up for recall cite an in-house study that was done before that July vote terminating San Miguel's contract with Cal Fire. They claim the district would save about $1.5 million in the first year by going with the standalone arrangement. McKenna said an objective analysis of San Miguel's financials was conducted in December by the San Diego Local Agency Formation Commission, which found that the agency had ended each fiscal year since 2008 with a surplus and now has a healthy reserve fund. In the middle of all this rancor on the board are the San Miguel firefighters, most of whom belong to Cal Fire. Their morale has been impacted by the ongoing rift, says Fire Chief Darren Howell. I've never seen anything like it, Chief Howell added. And he likens the board situation to a family feud. We realize it's the parents who are fighting, he says, and not the children.
Thank you for that, Miriam. Now for a story from El Cajon, from a planning commissioner, a remark that goes on the record. El Cajon is a city with tens of thousands of Iraqi immigrants, a city where a former mayor resigned after an uproar caused by remarks he made that were offensive to Iraqi immigrants. But last week, the same week that President Donald Trump announced an executive order to block new immigrants from Iraq, El Cajon Veterans Commissioner George Glover made a derogatory remark about El Cajon's new Iraqi city councilman, stating, "Why doesn't Ben Colasso go back home to where he came from?" Glover made the remark after a city council meeting on city appointees last week, responding to a planning commissioner candidate who asked Glover why Councilman Colasso voted against Mary Thigpen for personnel commissioner. Our reporter, Jonathan Goetz, was also present when Glover made the remark. Told of Glover's quote, Colasso voiced shock, stating, "I've been nothing but nice to him, thanking him always and supporting his business." East County Magazine emailed Glover with questions about his comment before publishing his words. He provided a written response voicing respect for Colasso, that he considers him a friend despite differing political views, and insisted his words were not meant as racist. He did not refute making the statement, but insisted it was taken out of context and accused our media outlet of trying to make trouble. He then warned our reporter to be very careful when only hearing a sliver of the conversation. Glover added, "The last thing I would tell anyone from Iraq, especially a Chaldean, would be to go to a country where they were persecuted for their religious beliefs. Your implication is outrageous, and I believe an apology is in order." He did not respond when asked for the context of his remark, or why he made a statement that seems demeaning towards immigrants. Specifically, our editor pressed Mr. Glover in an email, "Since you know that Mr. Colasso was born in Iraq, saying he would go back home to where he came from seems troubling from a civic representative." noting President Trump's push to block Iraqi immigrants from coming to the U.S. and ramp up deportations of immigrants. Glover did not respond. East County Magazine publishes his statement about Colosio, and we did not apologize, since the public has a right to know if a public official makes disparaging remarks based on a person's national origin, particularly in today's politically charged climate targeting immigrants. Now our editor, Miriam.
Thanks, and we should add that Councilman Colosio has announced he will hold a town hall forum open to all El Cajon residents on February 9th at 7 p.m. at the El Cajon Police Station's community room. On the lighter side of the news, here's a delicious story from the Grossmont Union High School District. Recently, nearly 20,000 students in the district participated in California Thursdays, sampling healthy, freshly prepared meals made with California-grown produce and fresh ingredients. It's all part of an expanding statewide program that serves California foods to California students. The Grossmont District kicked off its program with a media event in late January and will start serving up weekly California-sourced meals to all of its high school campuses in February. At the January event, served on the senior lawn, the students participated in taste testing, sampled a variety of locally sourced foods, and also learned where the foods came from. A statement from the district calls cooking up local foods from scratch the right thing to do, adding, California Thursdays is a win-win for schools and students, local farms and producers, and the environment. In addition to providing fresh, delicious meals that students devour, the program also boosts their health and readiness to learn, improves the district's budget, strengthens the regional economy, and cuts carbon emissions and waste, the Grossmont District concludes.
Now, we've got another late-breaking story from our community college district, and Rebecca Williamson will give us the latest on that.
The chancellor and education leaders at the Grossmont Community College District have sent a letter to all students following President Donald Trump's recent executive orders impacting immigrants and refugees, as well as his threat to establish a Muslim registry. This letter states, "We are troubled by how many of our students and their families are experiencing fear and anxiety about proposals and executive actions regarding U.S. immigration policies by the new presidential administration that affect immigrants and refugees, as well as children of undocumented immigrants who have been able to pursue higher education in the United States under the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, or DACA, program." The letter then advises that the Community College District Governing Board will vote February 21st on whether to adopt four policies. Grossmont and Cuyamaca colleges are open to all students who meet the minimum requirement for admission, regardless of background, culture, religion, or immigration status. The district will not release any personally identifiable student information, including data related to immigration status, without a judicial warrant or court order unless authorized by the student or required by law. The district will not cooperate with any federal effort to create a registry of individuals based on any protected characteristics such as religion, national origin, race, or sexual orientation. And the district stands proudly for the heritage of American community colleges as hallmarks of the diverse, engaged, and healthy democracy. The letter also urged students with concerns to reach out to counselors on the Grossmont and Cuyamaca College campuses.
This is Kim Cooney with an announcement for El Cajon residents. The City of El Cajon is holding public hearings to determine how it should draw up City Council district boundaries and establish district elections. The hearings follow voters' approval of a ballot measure last November approving a shift from at-large elections, in which all voters in the city vote for all five council members, to district elections in which each neighborhood elects its own council member. The goal is to provide representation to communities that may lack representation on the council. The next hearing will be on February 14th at 7 p.m. in the City Council chambers. The public can speak at the hearing to voice opinions. If you can't attend, you can send comments to the city clerk or call 619-441-1763 with questions.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice, recording at our studio in East County. Today, my very special guests are David Murphy, who is the Executive Director of the International Rescue Committee, and Kathy Anderson, the Executive Director of Survivors of Torture International right here in San Diego. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being with you.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here today.
But the topic today is we're going to be talking about the impact that President Donald Trump's recent executive order banning the immigration of refugees from around the world is having right here in San Diego. David, can you tell us exactly what the order covers?
So, globally, there are more than 65 million displaced people in the world today. Every year, the United States brings in a number of refugees based upon a presidential determination that's made. For the last several years, the United States has brought in 70,000 refugees. In 2016, the fiscal year, we brought in 85,000. And for 2017, we were going to bring in 110,000 refugees from all around the world. This is done by this presidential determination where it is earmarked for different parts of the world. And so now with this new presidential executive order, it has reduced the total number of refugees from 110,000 down to 50,000. And it has stopped refugee resettlement from the 7 countries immediately, and there will be a 4-month pause on the refugees coming from all around the world. And so, in effect, no refugees will be coming for the next 4 months.
And the 7 countries are predominantly Muslim countries that are on the banned list, including an indefinite ban on Syrian refugees.
Correct. And so the list of the 7 countries are Iraq, Syria, Iran, Libya, Sudan, Somalia, and Yemen.
How is this impacting San Diego? Can you give us an idea of how many refugees San Diego has and how many of those were coming to the United States this year were coming to San Diego before this order took effect?
So the planning figure for 2017 was 110,000 refugees to come to the entire United States. And then here in San Diego County, we have always been a very welcoming city and a welcoming county. And we receive between 3% and 4% of the total population of refugees that come to the United States. And so for this year, we were planning on upwards of 3,500 to 4,000 refugees to come to San Diego this year.
San Diego has a long tradition, as you've noted, of taking in refugees, starting with the Vietnamese boat people who were airlifted and brought here back in the late 1970s. Many of them have integrated very well into society. They did very well in the schools and starting businesses and so forth.
Absolutely. In the late 70s and early 80s, hundreds of thousands of Vietnamese refugees came to Camp Pendleton. And from there, they went to different parts of the country. They have acclimated in. They are successful businessmen, businesswomen. Their kids go to school, and they are part of the fabric of America today.
The reason that President Trump has given for why he's put this 4-month pause on refugees and maybe indefinitely in the case of Syria is because he's concerned about the possibility of terrorists somehow getting into the country and wants to implement what he calls extreme vetting of all refugees. How extensive is the vetting currently?
So it's really unfortunate that refugees have fallen into this trap. There is such a miscommunication and misperception about refugees. Previously, more than a year ago, refugees enjoyed bipartisan support. And it's only in this last year and a half where that during the political process that refugees have fallen into this political narrative of refugees, immigrants, illegal migration, Muslim terrorists. And this is actually totally false, and it's a very false narrative. The refugee resettlement process begins overseas, where the U.S. government physically goes out to refugee camps and personally identifies potential refugees for resettlement. We look for the most needy, the most in need of protection, the people that are in most of need of the safety, security, and protection that the United States can afford. There is then a 2-year process where U.S. government, Department of Homeland Security staff will physically go to refugee camps, conduct quite a number of in-person interviews, build up a case file. If you pass through these checks, then you go through a number of security vetting processes, background checks, biometrics, upwards of 15 different government databases, including Department of Defense, Department of State, FBI, CIA. If at any time you get dinged on any of these security background checks, you're brought in for either further investigation or you are dropped out of the refugee resettlement program. Once you have completed all of these checks, which again takes more than 2 years, then you are eligible to come to the United States.
Out of the refugees that have been admitted to the United States since the 9/11 terror attacks in 2001, how many of those refugees actually committed an act of terror on U.S. soil?
Zero.
Zero. Is it safe to say that if a terrorist really wanted to get into the United States, they'd probably choose a little easier way than going through a refugee program that takes years and years of vetting?
To come to the United States through the Refugee Resettlement Program, you are the most security-vetted individual to come to the United States. The U.S. brings in millions of people every year through different visa programs, work visas, student visas, where there are no background checks. There is no security vetting. And yet, refugees who go through the most stringent background checks are now being singled out.
Yeah, it seems really unfair in a lot of ways. Kathy, I would like for you to tell us a little bit about what some of these refugees have been through. You're with survivors of torture. Can you give us a handle on how many refugees, what percentage of them that come here have actually endured more than the horrors of war? They've actually been tortured.
Yeah, the latest research is showing that 44% of all refugees admitted into the United States are torture survivors.
Wow.
It appears that there are at least 35,000 torture survivors in San Diego County alone and 1.3 million in the United States who are torture survivors.
Horrific. So it must be really traumatic for someone who's come from around the world, who's endured all of that. They come here, they think they're safe, they maybe want to bring their families here, as so many of them do, and now this order comes down. What are you seeing? What's the human toll of this? How is this impacting the clients that you deal with who've endured torture?
Many of our clients, because of the torture they have suffered, are receiving counseling services, and they are reporting increased anxiety, increased depression. They're asking to see their therapists more frequently now. They are afraid for themselves and for their family members back home.
We have an office in City Heights and El Cajon, and we have been inundated with people coming to our office wondering, what's going to happen to me? I'm a refugee. Refugees that come to the United States are totally legal to come here. They can travel. They can work. After they have been here 1 year, they're eligible for a green card. And after 5 years, they're eligible for citizenship. And we are getting not only refugees, but immigrants and migrants that are coming into our office with fear, not knowing what's going to happen to them. What's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to my children? My children go to school. And so it's really creating an area of fear for a lot of people.
Let's talk a little bit about the people who have green cards, who came here as refugees or immigrants and have their green card, which means that they're a legal resident, and yet a lot of these legal residents, students, business people, artists, musicians, got caught overseas and are not being allowed back in now, I understand. What's the latest on that, and how many of the people you talk to are caught up in this green card issue?
So if you are from one of these seven countries and you have a green card and you are in the United States, we recommend that you do not travel back home because at this time it is not clear if you will be allowed back into this country or not.
And I would imagine that's not just back home, but does that include leaving the U.S. at all? If you go to Mexico for the weekend, is there a risk you won't be allowed back across the border?
Correct. Do not leave the United States at all.
What advice are you giving to refugees who've been here a little longer than that?
So for all refugees, if you have been here 1 year and you have not received your green card yet, please go apply for your green card. If you have been here 5 years and you are eligible for citizenship, we recommend that you go take the classes and apply for citizenship to the United States so that you will become a full citizen of the United States.
Yeah, and interestingly, This was new to me to learn today, was that refugees can apply for citizenship after 5 years, whereas for other immigrants, it's 7 years.
Correct.
Interesting. And only the immigrants that came here lawfully, not the undocumented, who are sort of forced to live in the shadows, even if they've been here for decades, some of them. That's a whole different story. What else would you like our listeners to know about this issue, and what action can listeners take to help if they are concerned about this issue? Kathy or David, I'll let you both weigh in on this, and they're concerned. What can they do?
They can do a couple of things. One is certainly to write letters or phone their congressional representatives, both of our senators, and let them know what they feel and what their thoughts are around this new executive order. They can also go onto our websites, and there are ways to get involved with both organizations. So I think several options, but I also think it needs to be sustained. So we need to continue to advocate for the most vulnerable of the vulnerable, not just once, not just twice, but on an ongoing basis, probably for the foreseeable future.
Okay, and how about you, David?
So in addition to contacting your elected officials, take action. Read up about it. Talk about this with family and friends in your community. Let people know about the realities of what's happening to refugees and immigrants with these new executive orders that are happening.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine you must be seeing people also that are worried about family members that are trapped over there who can't come join them. Are you seeing families torn apart, the actual human consequences of this?
The U.S. has 60,000 individuals in the pipeline that are vetted and ready to come to the United States over the course of this year.
So they've been approved to be refugees to come here, and now they're told they can't.
And many are U.S. ties coming here to San Diego, and now those families will remain split apart indefinitely until who knows what happens.
Yeah, very frightening. And I would imagine many of them are in danger where they are. I mean, what conditions are they living in, the people that are in camps, or are some of them still trapped inside war-torn Syria at this point?
So the refugees will be outside of Syria and either living in a town village or in a refugee camp. Mm-hmm. And trust me, living in a refugee camp is no place to raise a family.
No, it can be very upsetting and certainly not a healthy environment for raising children. You're right. And of course, it's not just Syria and the Middle East, but this is affecting Sudan, Somalia, countries in Africa as well.
And Yemen also.
And Yemen, yes. I want to give those websites for people that wish to get in touch and help out. Survivors of Torture International can be reached at notorture.org. And the International Rescue Committee can be reached at rescue.org/San Diego. What about the politicians? Should people be contacting their members of Congress, their senators?
Absolutely. And don't contact just the Democratic elected officials. Also contact the Republican officials. Let them know the stance of what you feel. That's who our elected officials are. They are there to represent all of us.
If you could give one message to President Trump today, what would you want him to hear?
That this week that we have been living with our clients has been one of the most shameful weeks that we have ever experienced. This week has not represented the American values that all of us were taught in school that we hold dear. And we are greatly concerned for the future of not just our clients, but for our country.
Nobody wants to be a refugee. You are forced to be a refugee. You are forced to flee your home because of the fear of violence. Many refugees have experienced this violence firsthand. They have lost family members. They have lost businesses and jobs. And they have had to close the chapter on their life. They now have a new chapter that can open up to them in the land of opportunity called the United States. The fabric of the United States is built upon refugees and immigrants. We cannot forget that, and we should not abandon people in their greatest hour of need.
Well, I really want to thank both of you for taking the time to join us here today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the network for social justice.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Our pleasure.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And today I'm here with our fellow correspondent and political analyst, Gene Carpenter. Gene, welcome.
Well, great to be here, Miriam.
We've got a lot to talk about. And today we're going to be bringing you up to speed, listeners, on the latest developments after those two controversial executive orders that were issued by President Donald Trump. The first one, as I'm sure you've heard by now, authorized building a wall along the entire U.S.-Mexico border, although it failed to address how to pay for it, and it also ordered a crackdown on sanctuary cities and states that shelter undocumented immigrants. The second order puts an immediate halt to admission of refugees from all countries for 120 days, an indefinite ban on Syrian refugees, and a ban on admitting citizens from certain Muslim nations, seven of them, for 90 days. The latter order was interpreted to include even legal U.S. residents with green cards initially and people with dual citizenship in allied nations such as Britain and Canada. And that has caused chaos around the world since Trump failed to notify even our allies or his own State Department, state and local authorities, or airport officials who were caught unaware. A lot of people were detained indefinitely, and several court orders have halted deportation temporarily as more lawsuits are challenging the entire law as unconstitutional. Protests arose at airports across the U.S. from San Diego to New York, drawing many thousands of people, and yet, in spite of all that, Donald Trump insists that his order is working, quote, very nicely.
Miriam, this is unbelievable. This sounds like an alternative reality show.
Well, he is a reality TV star, I suppose. Gene, can you fill us in on what countries the travel ban includes?
Yes, all citizens from Iraq, Iran, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, Syria, Yemen are banned for at least 3 months. It also bars refugees from all countries for 4 months and cuts roughly in half the number of refugees in the U.S. will take in over the next year. Trump says this is to combat terrorism, yet no refugees from any of the banned countries have committed any terrorist acts in the U.S. However, several countries that have had citizens commit terror acts here were left off Trump's ban, including the United Arab Emirates, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia, where most of the 9/11 hijackers came from. And I'm wondering why Trump left these off. We do know that Trump has business interests in those countries, including large hotels and golf courses.
Yeah, although those countries were also on the State Department's list of countries of concern under Obama's administration, but that wasn't really enforced. I understand that was put through as part of some omnibus bill. So it really sounds like Trump has some conflicts of interest. Could that get him in trouble with the emoluments clause of the Constitution, do you think?
It could provide grounds for impeachment, some experts have suggested.
Wow. Okay.
So, Miriam, what's the latest on the legal challenges?
Well, I just checked, and as of this morning, there's at least 41 lawsuits that have been filed so far since Trump took office, and most of those are over one or both of these orders. The ACLU got the first court victory the very first day that this thing was in place. However, it's limited in scope. It simply stopped the deportation of people who were already here at airports, the green card holders, for a couple of weeks pending hearings. Now, there's some others. CARE, which is the Council on American-Islamic Relations, they have a challenge that's going after the entire law, saying it's unconstitutional based on discriminating on religion. Trump says he's not really targeting Muslims, but he has gone on Christian radio and said that he's going to give preference to Christians. Interestingly, the Minority Humanitarian Foundation has noted that it could help persecuted Christians in Iraq, and that potentially could include family members of a lot of the Chaldeans right here in East County.
You heard about Sally Yates.
Yeah, the acting attorney general. In fact, she's just been nominated for the John F. Kennedy Profiles in Courage Award because she came out and said she had doubts over whether Trump's order was legal, and so she refused to enforce it. She was his acting attorney general. And right away, Trump fired her and replaced her with somebody else who said he will enforce it, at least until the Senate decides if it's going to confirm Trump's nominee for Attorney General, Jeff Sessions, who, by the way, is facing some pretty tough questions on whether he will act independently of Trump if he's asked to do something unconstitutional.
That sounds a lot like Nixon's Saturday Night Massacre.
Yeah.
Remember during Watergate, Nixon fired Special Prosecutor Archibald Cox?
Yeah, it was because he was investigating Nixon's actions.
Yeah, and he took resignations from two top Justice Department officials who refused to follow illegal orders of Nixon.
Yeah, there's definitely some parallels there, aren't there?
Yeah.
Also troubling is how Trump made these decisions without consulting the Justice Department or other top officials. You'd think he'd want to know if this is legal. He apparently did consult with White House counsel, but not the Justice Department, not the State Department that had to deal with all the ramifications around the world. He didn't even let the airport personnel know about
it. Now he's barred the head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and his National Security Advisor from National Security Council meetings.
And yet he's allowing his advisor, Steve Bannon, former publisher of Breitbart, a mouthpiece for the alt-right, some would say the white supremacist movement, to sit in on those meetings. So I'm wondering, what is it that he doesn't want his top military and national security advisors to hear?
It's very troubling. It sounds like a shock doctrine more to me than anything else to get everyone off balance.
Yeah, tell us about shock doctrine, Gene. What's that all about?
It's when there's an action taken that just makes everybody feel off balance and out of kilter. You see the reaction across the United States. On any of the news outlets, that's all we're hearing about, and all the demonstrations, and it's just not conducive to a strong society. It makes us look weak and vulnerable.
Correct. I understand sometimes that can be used as a distraction, too, to divert attention over here while they're doing something else that they may not want everybody to pay so much attention to.
We have to stay on our toes, don't we, Miriam?
We do. Now, a lot of people are starting to speak out against these executive orders. Governor Brown, in his State of the State speech, said that California will fight to protect all of our state's residents. And there's a bill working the way through the legislature right now that would make the entire state a sanctuary state. And the Democrats are expected to pass that. Many of them have issued statements supporting what they view as the need to protect the undocumented immigrants, including a lot of the students and people who were brought here even as children, from being deported. However, two of East County's representatives up there have come out against the sanctuary state legislation. Assemblyman Randy Bopel, newly elected from East County, says any efforts to codify California as a sanctuary state will impede law enforcement's ability to implement immigration policy, erode the rule of law, and jeopardize billions of dollars in federal funding. And he says if our state moves forward with this policy, the new administration may very well cut off grants and federal money to California, which would create budget calamity, he says. He says the legislature is playing with fire. Although Governor Brown is reportedly looking at ways that California could perhaps withhold some of the money that it sends to the federal government. Now, over on the state Senate side, Senator Joel Anderson already did vote against SB 54 that would make California a sanctuary. And he has taken a little different tact than Assemblyman Bopel, and he's actually come out and really demonized all undocumented immigrants. He says, I voted against SB 54, which will make California a sanctuary state that shields dangerous illegal immigrant felons in our jails and prisons from deportation. I don't want murderers, rapists, child molesters, or armed robbers protected by the state to be returned to our neighborhoods. And he says he wants to turn over all information on every person the federal government wants to deport in order to keep everyday citizens that he represents safe. Gene, what do you think about that?
To me, it sounds like making California a sanctuary state is a little bit like putting the shoe on the other foot. Given the economic power of California and all the revenue that the federal government receives from California, we should have a seat at the table. And I strongly oppose anything that's suggesting that illegals are murderers, rapists, criminals.
And actually, the percentage of illegal immigrants who commit serious crimes is actually less than the percentage of U.S. citizens that commit those serious crimes. This is much like Trump, where he came out with his statement about Mexicans being murderers and rapists, and there was such a tremendous backlash against that. And yet, Senator Anderson seems to be wading right into that fray with this really inflammatory statement that he's made.
Well, there's a constituency out there that thrives and believes in that. And I'm concerned at some point there's going to be a backlash with citizens taking the law into their own hands and feeling like they are being backed up by the Trump administration.
Violence targeting immigrants. Yeah, and this is a man, Senator Anderson, who has indicated he plans to run for supervisor next election when Supervisor Diane Jacob is termed out.
What about Susan Davis? Have we heard anything from her?
We have. She's called on Congress to overturn the ban on refugees and people from Muslim countries completely. And here's what Davis, who, by the way, is Jewish, had to say. She says, "The Muslim ban is a policy based on fear, not strength. This order will do nothing to keep us safe. If anything, it will likely have the opposite effect. This executive order will also reduce the stature and influence America will have globally," Congresswoman Davis concludes. She's also asked Homeland Security to release information on anybody who may have been detained at San Diego's airport. So we'll see if the Trump administration will comply with a Freedom of Information Act request. And by the way, East County Magazine put in a similar request. I asked Homeland Security not only for names of anybody detained and nationalities at the San Diego airport, but for anybody who was detained on their way to San Diego, if they were maybe picked up at another airport, cruise ship terminals, train stations, international borders, and any place else.
How about our Republican mayor in San Diego, Kevin Faulkner? Any word on him?
Yeah, he has actually come out against Trump's refugee ban. Mayor Faulkner says, "I am confident we can strengthen America's security without shutting America's doors." He adds that even though he does support more screening of immigrants who could pose threats, that Americans deserve an immigration policy that keeps us safe, but this temporary ban, which affects children, mothers, innocent families, and allies who support our armed forces, is not the right direction. Very forceful statement for a Republican mayor and reportedly candidate for governor.
I imagine a statement like that being heard by our vulnerable population would be quite comforting, wouldn't you think?
You would think so. And now, it's rare for a former president to criticize a sitting president, but I understand that a spokesman for Barack Obama has issued a statement on his behalf. Can you tell us what that says?
Well, a spokesman for Barack Obama has issued a statement on his behalf indicating he is heartened by the level of engagement of people across America, and that Obama fundamentally disagrees with the notion of discriminating against individuals based on their faith or religion.
Now, another troubling report is that some detainees have been denied a right to see an attorney as of when we're taping this, and there are accusations that Customs and Border Patrol, at least at Washington, D.C.'s Dulles Airport, have actually defied that court order. And a judge has asked the administration to explain to the court why it shouldn't be held in contempt. Now, for Congress to take action on reining in any of these, what some would say are executive excesses, as they always accused Obama of doing when he made executive orders, that would mean that some Republicans in Congress would have to stand up against Trump. But now some of them are speaking out. Can you tell us what, for example, Arizona's Senator John McCain had to say?
Yes, I was very heartened hearing from John McCain, who has a worldview that I find refreshing at times. On Face the Nation, he said that the Battle of Mosul raging in Iraq against ISIS forces, that the effect will probably in some areas give ISIS more propaganda.
Now, Congressman Justin Amash, who is a Republican in Michigan, which has a large Arab American population, tweeted that the order undermines the Constitution by banning immigrants on the basis of nationality. And he says if the president wants to change immigration law, he must work with Congress.
And even Congressman Duncan Hunter, he's a Republican from Alpine who has been an early backer of Trump. He's written to Trump asking him to honor a request from his Secretary of Defense, General Mattis, to exempt Iraq translators and others who helped us in the U.S. military.
Yeah. Hunter, he's an Iraq war veteran, by the way, and he wrote, "We made a promise to the men and women who served alongside us on the battlefield, and we must uphold that promise to leave no man behind." Although he hasn't said anything about everybody else that's been swept up and detained or banned, other than the Iraqi translators.
And Republican House Speaker Paul Ryan, he's backed Trump's executive order barring immigrants from Muslim nations in an apparent flip-flop. He now says he supports strengthening the visa vetting process. On Friday, he stated, "President Trump is right to make sure we are doing everything possible to know exactly who is entering our country."
Now, that's a little different than what he was saying back in December 2015 at the Republican National Convention, isn't it?
That's a flip-flop.
Yeah.
At the Republican National Convention, Ryan said Trump's proposed ban on Muslim refugees is not what the party stands for, and most importantly, it's not what the country stands for, noting that freedom of religion is a fundamental constitutional principle.
Apparently one he's forgotten about after Trump got elected. Now, how has Trump been reacting to all these people coming out and criticizing him?
when New York Senator Chuck Schumer, a Democrat, was seen with tears in his eyes talking about how this violates our principles of liberty as a nation of immigrants, Trump sent a tweet accusing Schumer of fake tears.
Yeah, which is really appalling because Schumer's great-grandmother actually died in the Holocaust along with seven of her children. Trump also drew criticism from Jewish groups for making this executive order barring refugees on, of all days, Holocaust Remembrance Day. And in addition, in speaking about that occasion, he failed to mention the Jewish victims of the Holocaust, even though 6 million of the 7 million who died in the Holocaust were Jewish. And I might add, that includes my great-grandparents.
There's been a lot of discussion about Steve Bannon having some input into that. Now let's get to the wall. This is one area where Trump could face more opposition from Republicans due to the cost. He campaigned by promising to make Mexico pay for it, but Mexico's president has said repeatedly that they won't. He floated the idea of imposing a 20% tariff on goods from Mexico and using that money to pay for the wall.
But the problem with that is that, you know, while it's true that there's a lot of money from Mexican imports that actually on paper could even be enough to cover the cost of the wall itself, the problem is that Mexico said it would retaliate if we impose that tariff by slapping imports on the goods that it imports from us, from the U.S. So actually, we'd wind up losing money, most of the financial experts are saying.
Also, that 20% tariff would actually be paid by consumers buying all those Mexican products, from our beloved avocados to tequila and bigger ticket items like car parts and air conditioners now made in Mexico.
Yeah, so basically, we'll be paying for the wall, not Mexico. Now, we're also seeing other countries threatening retaliation over the travel ban. Iran's president says he wants to throw out U.S. citizens in response. And the United Arab Emirates, which isn't even included in the ban, says that it, too, should kick out Americans. And that's a pretty big deal because the United States has thousands of people working there, including many American universities that employ people and a strategically important U.S. military base. So, to me, the president's order seems to be playing with fire in some respects.
And what about all the contractors that worked in other countries of the ban?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, this could really hurt businesses. A lot of American businesses are involved over there. Once again, Donald Trump seemed to take care of his own businesses in the countries that are excluded from the ban, but not everybody else's businesses.
And many of our allies in Europe have also criticized this. Meanwhile, Canada's Prime Minister Trudeau has said his country will welcome refugees turned away by Trump's executive order. That's very heartening.
Yeah, really. That's a very powerful statement from Canada. Now, Trump's rhetoric and actions may also be fueling hate crimes. A Trump supporter in Canada has been arrested for a mass shooting at a mosque in Quebec City. Muslims were actually the victims of what Canada has deemed a terror attack.
It's interesting. Trump has managed to break one presidential record during his first week in office.
Well, what's that?
He's the first president ever to fall to less than 50% approval rating in 8 days, according to a poll by Politico, which found a 48% approval rating.
Wow. I understand it took even George Bush like 1,200 days or something to fall below 50%.
A poll by Quinnipiac was even worse, showing only 36% of the American people approved of Trump's performance in the first 5 days.
Wow. Well, now, some companies are fighting back against these orders in different ways. Google, which had about 100 of its employees stranded overseas due to Trump's order, has announced it will donate $2 million to a crisis fund for the American Civil Liberties Union, Immigrant Legal Resources, the International Rescue Committee, and the United Nations Refugee Agency. And moreover, they're encouraging their employees to donate matching funds that could be up to $4 million.
Yeah, and Starbucks has announced it will hire 10,000 refugees, starting with translators, who helped the U.S. in Iraq. I've heard that the Republican backers of Trump have...
Yeah, they're trying to boycott Starbucks.
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I was at Starbucks this morning, and I was looking there thinking, how many are extra customers who liked what Starbucks did, and how many are staying away because of the ban? But I still saw a line around the block to get in, so at least at my local Starbucks, it didn't seem to be hurting them too much.
It'd be lovely if we could have some way to vote when we go to Starbucks and get that data.
As far as Trump's executive order threatening to withhold federal funds from states or local governments that are refusing to cooperate with federal orders to deport undocumented immigrants.
Governor Brown also said to be looking into ways to withhold money that California sends to the federal government.
Yeah, he is. And the University of California and the CSU systems have also taken steps to shield students from deportation to the degree they can, such as refusing to turn over student records unless they're compelled by a court order or other law to do so. And coming up later this month, the Grossmont-Cuyamaca Community College District Board is going to be voting on whether or not to do the same thing.
I've heard that many churches and other organizations and even immigration attorneys are also mobilizing efforts to help those facing deportation.
They are, although there's a risk a lot of people aren't aware of, because this order, and I think this is one of the most insidious things about it, it actually allows imposition of sanctions on anybody helping undocumented immigrants. So potentially, if they chose to enforce that, they could make criminals out of good-hearted people that are just trying to protect even their own relatives and friends and neighbors.
That's very troubling. Also troubling, the order requires the Secretary of Homeland Security to prepare weekly reports on criminal actions committed by aliens in the U.S. Where have we heard that before?
I hate to say it, Gene, but Nazi Germany. During the 1930s under Hitler, the Nazis sought to create internal enemies by listing the criminal actions of a minority. That is a really dangerous precedent, in my view, that in the 1930s sought to turn public opinions against targeted minorities. Eventually, people kind of quit caring what happened to them. And of course, we now know many of them wound up sent to concentration camps and exterminated, murdered.
That's my concern about Steve Bannon and his roots in white supremacy and racism and xenophobia. Mm-hmm. And he's being allowed a platform that's very disturbing to me.
Yeah, on the National Security Council. And they say that he's not allowing paper trails of these meetings. We don't know what's happening behind closed doors there. And he's kicked out two of the top people, the Joint Chiefs of Staff chair again and the National Security Director. I just don't understand. Why would you want that? Unless there's something really dark there going on that you don't want these people to know about.
And I've heard that he's, when asked that question, he said, well, they can come anytime they want to, but they don't have to be there.
Actually, the New York Times reports that the order bans them, except for when specific issues under their jurisdiction come up.
When you combine that with the racism of many of his cabinet posts, his attempts to silence federal agencies from speaking to the press or public, his efforts to discredit the media and put forth alternative facts, his sweeping executive actions done without the advice or consent of Congress, the ramifications are very disturbing.
They are. I agree, Gene. These are not actions that are compatible with a democracy, but more in line with what we normally see in totalitarian regimes. I mean, we've had conservative administrations, and I have never seen the kind of fear that we're seeing this time around. This is really something different. We've never seen the dismantling of the very institutions of democracy that this administration attempts to be going after. Disturbingly, the Atlantic Monthly just published an article titled How to Build an Autocracy, and it spells out exactly how Donald Trump could do so, many of the steps he's already taken. The Atlantic Monthly is actually urging the American people to resist. This is not some, you know, lefty liberal publication. On that note, we'll end our discussion today with this warning from the Atlantic Monthly for all Americans. It reads, "We are living through the most dangerous challenge to the free government of the United States that anyone alive has encountered. What happens next is up to you and me. Don't be afraid. This moment of danger can also be your finest hour as a citizen and an American." That's from the Atlantic Monthly. Gene, I want to thank you again for coming on the air with us today and sharing your analysis.
You're welcome, Miriam, and thank you for letting me share some of my thoughts with you today.
Yeah, I would urge all of you to go out and to your neighbors, regardless of who they voted for.
Let's all stay aware of the current events, and I look forward to discussing things like the Dodd-Frank bill that's under attack again.
Yeah, well, I think we're going to have a lot more of these discussions, so stay tuned, listeners, and we'll be back soon on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a Consumer Report for East County Magazine and KNSJ Radio. If you bought milk or other dairy products such as yogurt, half and half, or cream anytime since 2003, you may be eligible for a refund through a class action suit that alleges price fixing by the dairy industry. Claims must be submitted by January 31st. The suit applies to consumers in 15 states, including California, who bought milk from a grocery store or other retailer. The National Milk Producers Federation and others in the dairy products industry denied guilt. but have agreed to settle the case for $52 million. To be eligible for a share of the settlement, you must have purchased milk products for consumption, not for resale. No proof of purchase is required. The amount you could receive will be based on the number of products claimed, as well as the number of valid claims submitted. For more information, you can call 877-417-4561, send an email to info@boughtmilk.com, or visit classactionrebates.com/settlements/fresh-milk.
Welcome to Vines and Wines on the East County Magazine Show, bringing you news to savor about our region's fast-growing winemaking industry.
This is Jonathan Getz with East County Magazine's Vines and Wines. Cuyamaca College has secured a state grant of nearly $260,000 to bolster its new viticulture apprenticeship program and cover the cost of planting a two-acre vineyard at the Water Conservation Garden on the college's campus in Rancho San Diego. The Viticulture Apprenticeship Program, the only one of its kind in Southern California when it launched last fall, aims to address a shortage of qualified workers knowledgeable in vine and pest diseases, irrigation practices, and harvest operations that are critical in the growing viticulture industry. Last fall, funds to support the program were lacking, and only three people signed up. The grant from the California Community College's Chancellor's Office will help grow the program and cover operating costs. Graduates of the Viticulture Technician Apprentice Program will leave Cuyamaca College understanding the basic principles of soil science, soil fertility, and irrigation construction, in addition to having the skills needed to plant and maintain vineyards, cultivate and harvest wine grapes, process the product through the bottling process, handle retail operations, and support customer service. Besides taking 14.5 units of courses in the Ornamental Horticulture Department, students also are required to complete 3,000 hours as a paid apprentice. Cuyamaca College President Juliana Barnes predicts, "Our program will play a key leadership role in the region in training future professionals to take on needed roles in the wine industry." San Diego County's wine grape crop has risen in value from $378,000 to $6.5 million in a decade. The San Diego County Farm Bureau reports, "Our county now has more than 100 wineries, according to Supervisor Diane Jacob. Statewide, California's wine industry employs more than 41,000 people, not counting seasonal and temporary employees. California, the fourth largest wine producer in the world, crafts 85% of the wine consumed in the United States. Applicants to the program, which falls under Cuyamaca College's Career and Technical Education Division, must be at least 21 years old. If you are interested in applying for the new program, you can contact Donald Schultz in the Ornamental Horticulture Department at Cuyamaca College by calling 619-660-4023. That number again is 619-660-4023.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.